oh my. Put me in, coach, I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turn two in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn two in every way, so I turn to you two today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it in the points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn two, what it do?
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Turn 2 podcast brought to you by rotofanatic.com. I am your host, Matt Williams. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about redraft in terms of if you were redrafting your league today, and there's plenty out there, Memorial Day drafts, where you can have a second chance to redo all the horrible mistakes you no doubt have done in your original draft, whether it be through poor player analysis, tricks, bad luck, injuries, what have you. Joining me to discuss this are a couple of the co-owners over RotoFanatic. First off, Carm Mayorano. What's up, buddy?
Hey, thanks for having me on again. Looking forward to this discussion.
And also on the other side, Paul Mamino, the architect of the data monster.
Going on. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward.
You both sound so excited to be here. I can barely contain the enthusiasm.
Let's go.
We went through the players that have been doing better, I realized I own about zero of them. So it's been kind of a depressing 10 minutes for us to
go into this. On the flip side, you probably roster all the bad players.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're going to go position by position. We're going to talk about who's doing better than we thought, worse than we thought, for various reasons. And we're going to talk about, if you know, rest of season value for anyone not redrafting, or for anyone who is redrafting, you know, we'll get into that a little bit. But for the most part, this will be from a rest of season context, because most people are stuck with the players they have. Catcher, why not start at the most exciting position in baseball? Real quick, there's two players that have actually performed exactly where you hope they would. And that's Salvador Perez and Wilson Contreras. I believe they were drafted as the second, third best catcher, and they are performing as the second and third best catcher. So shout out to them as being one of the very few consistent players in fantasy this year. A couple of standouts. Let's start with Buster Posey, who, I should say, this isn't a complete surprise to many. Maybe the level is which he is performing is a little bit of a surprise, but he was a target of some for having a nice little bounce back now that he's like kind of removed from injury a little bit. But again, he's batting .351 with 9 home runs, so no one really saw this coming. So starting with you, Carm, Buster Posey, what do you make of him? What do you expect from him going forward?
Yeah, so I think prior to draft season, I had him right around the top 12 catcher, just behind Austin Nola and Wilson Ramos. And I obviously love his production. I think if we had thought about it a little more, getting that time off from 2020 probably helps a catcher more so than another position, just the rest of the knees and the rest of the body that gets dinged up squatting every day. If I was in a redraft, I definitely believe most of the skills. Obviously, he probably won't bat .351. I know he's known as an average guy, but I don't see that keeping up for the rest of the season. And something to think about too is that for every two games he starts, he gets benched in favor of Kurt Casale. So you're probably getting a typical week of four games from him, at the most five. And that's something to think about against guys like Contreras and Yadier Molina. Molina has started the last 10 games. Wilson's pretty much in there all the time. So you know you're kind of have a floor with him in terms of games played. But with that said, I would bump him above Ramos for sure, Nola for sure, of course, Travis d'Arnaud for sure, because he's out for another, 3 months. And probably Christian Vasquez as well. And then you're getting into like Will Smith, Grandal, Contreras territory. And I probably still keep him behind there just because of the floor of that game's played.
All right. I was actually going to ask you who you would rather have, Buster Posey or Christian Vasquez. So I guess you answered that for me.
Yeah.
Getting into another player who's outperformed, which is someone who rest the season could be interesting. Unfortunately, he did get injured as well, like everyone else. And that's Carson Kelly of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Paul, he's someone, again, who also he had a little bit of a cheering section in the preseason as someone who could bounce back and break out, except that was somewhat tempered because of the enthusiasm around Dalton Varsho, someone who struggled mightily in last year and then struggled mightily in spring training. I'm not sure what people were really hoping for, but Carson Kelly batting 333 with a 487 on base, 6 home runs. Do you expect him to be a viable top 10 option at catcher going forward?
Actually, he was one of the only guys that we're going to talk about, I think, that I actually did draft somewhere. And before he got hurt, you know, it was going extremely well, like you pointed out, hitting 330, hitting for some power and showing that that's there. But he's kind of always hit for the power. The average is something that's relatively new. I don't think it's going to kind of maintain forever. And I think he's going to kind of fall back towards his career average. So rest of the season, I'd be more surprised if he hits, you know, 290 plus. It'll probably be in the 260 range. So I think that that's still viable for a catcher in the sense that he's going to play almost every single day, which is the majority of, you know, the battle with catchers. It's just that they're actually playing and that they're actually getting consistent at bats. So I think if he does end up hitting around 260 and maintaining the power he's had, I mean, 2019, he had 18 home runs, pretty good for a catcher still. So if you can get a catcher that's going to give you around 20 plus bombs, that probably almost automatically vaults them into the top 10 unless they pull a Zunino and hit 150.
Let's talk about Mike Zunino. Let's talk about him. He's the most fourth most valuable catcher in fantasy right now, batting 214, not a surprise, with 11 home runs, which, again, not a surprise. I mean, we know he can hit home runs. The question for me isn't necessarily, is he going to be top 10 moving forward? Because I don't think anyone actually believes he will. The question for me is, who would you rather roster going forward, Mike Zunino or his teammate, Francisco Mejia, who we know has the pedigree and the hype, at least previous season prospect type, of being someone people were counting on? Right now, he's batting 271 with 3 home runs. You know, there's only so much you can do batting so lowly in 214 for Mike Zunino, but the league average is still 230. There's, you know, the offense is down. So if he's going to be hitting bombs like that, there's a certain point where surface stats lie. Like I was having a conversation with my dad the other day, and I was just saying, like, would you rather have a player who batted 300 but constantly failed with men on base? Or would you rather have a player batting 200 who always came through with people on base? Like, in real life, you would much rather start the player who's going to come through. So it's all in the eye of the beholder and what the actual results come. So each of you real quick, Carm, who would you rather have going forward, Zunino or Mejia?
I'd probably rather have Zunino at this point. I was targeting Mejia in best ball drafts as my third catcher. Looking back, I had Zunino outside my top 30. Probably should have been picking Zunino over him. Zunino does have a ridiculous 28.1% barrel rate right now. his career average is just under 13%, so we know that's going to regress mightily. And when it does, that batting average will probably drop below the Mendoza line. But even still, I think the Rays are comfortable with him having that 22 to 28 homer pop and playing him most of the time.
I dig the 287 on base and 869 OPS. That just is funny to me. Not too many people can pull that off. Paul, are you still sticking with Zunino, or are you worried here?
No,
he is an obvious ship off though, right? If someone needs a catcher.
If someone comes, you know, calling for him, then you might not be able to replicate his power, but you can probably replicate his overall fantasy value from another catcher. Mm-hmm. But for me, the thing that I think we kind of continually forget, especially when it comes to catchers, is how much teams value defense still. And Zunino is a very good defensive catcher.
Yep.
And he does hit 180 or whatever it is, and has power, but he's going to play because he's good defensively. Mm-hmm. It's that same thing where, you know, Kevin Kiermaier plays 150 games, well, should play 150 games if he doesn't get hurt every other game, because how good he is defensively. So, you know, those guys that are good defensively, they matter in real life baseball. They don't matter as much in fantasy, but that means they're going to get the at-bats that you need. So I think that kind of vaults him into that top 16, you know, so range. And he's definitely an automatic start in a two-catcher league for the majority of leagues.
Yeah. I think the best case scenario here is he approaches his 2017 numbers where he hit 25 bombs with a 251 average for WRC plus of just over 125. I think that could happen. He's at a 140 WRC plus right now, but I feel like he would still need to have a good amount of luck in terms of that barrel rate not regressing back to like low teens to get there.
I mean, I still think if you're betting catcher's rest of season, who has the most home runs from here on, he's got to be in the top 5. Just pure home run power. There, maybe Perez is ahead of him.
Yeah. I would. That's something I wouldn't bet on. We're already running way behind because that's how it goes here on turn two. Catchers that are not doing well. Yasmani Grandal. I don't know off the top of my head. He's batting 50, like 050 with a 900 on base percentage. Am I close?
Did you see there? I forget exactly where I saw the stat, but it's like highest walk rates is like Barry Bonds, like five of the six, and the other one is Grandal. Right now,
let me actually get his real stats.
For he's batting 136.
Yeah, 130.
He's batting 130. What's his on base?
391.
391.
WRC plus of 126.
So, like, I mean, in on base percentage leagues, this guy's like the number one catcher in Roto. He's like barely startable. I love the variance. I wrote up about something about him a few weeks ago. It was several weeks ago. Everything actually looked okay. From a metric standpoint, like it looked like, you know, he was doing what he typically did and was going to turn around, but for whatever reason is not going his way. Is he a buy 100 low? For it's like it continues.
I mean, he's not going to be this. He's too good of a hitter historically to be this bad. So I think, you know, if someone is in one of my leagues is looking to trade him, I'm definitely looking to buy it. He's going to play every day. They don't let Yermin catch, and they're not going to put Zach Collins out there consistently. He's going to play every day. So he's going to get his numbers eventually. And
hey, 391 on base. Do we care how you get on base if it's a hit or a walk?
Exactly. No, that's the thing, right? Yeah.
If it's a Roto league.
Yeah. No, I mean the White Sox.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, he's definitely starting. I still see him as a top five catcher by season's end. Definitely a buy low.
Yeah, have to. Yeah, right. You have to. It's just
you weren't drafting him for more than what, a 230 average?
Yes. Yeah. You weren't expecting an average anyway. Exactly.
Yeah.
Alejandro Kirk, you know, he got injured. He's a big guy behind the plate. He got injured. Not a completely unpredictable thing. They weren't playing him as well. He wasn't hitting as well. What do you make of him? Once he comes back and he looks like he's going to be back on the team, is there any interest there? Or would you rather just play the wire? Is he someone you'd still be interested in? In rostering in the hopes that they finally replace Danny Jansen down the road?
For me, it comes down to the playing time. For catchers, the entire story of the game is playing time. I don't really care quite as much. I don't want to take the guy who's going to play, you know, two or three times a week that can hit really well over the guy who's going to play the other four to five. So I'm going to always take the guy that's going to play more. I mean, probably Jansen shouldn't be on rosters unless, you know, even if he is playing every single day, but I think Kirk isn't going to get nearly enough ABs, especially with some of their other guys turning it around and getting healthy, that even the DH at bats aren't going to be there for him.
Carm, who would you rather have, Alejandro Kirk or Tomas Nido?
Oh my gosh. I can't believe that's a real question in 2021.
It's a real question.
That's absurd.
I would rather have Nido.
I think I'd rather have Nido too. I mean, yeah. Kirk has a hip injury. He's on the 60-day IL that, When did he go on the IL? Was that April?
Yeah, end of April.
So he's not going to be back for what, another 3 weeks at least?
Yep.
And who knows how he'll hit once that happens. Plus, you've got Jansen, and they still have Reese McGuire, right? So, I mean.
I'm sorry. I have a child. I laugh anytime I hear his name.
Yes, I know.
If you don't know why, look it up, everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go, Nito. How about neither?
Hey, 15 team leagues with two catchers. There is no such thing as neither.
Matt, first, we'll force your hand. Nito or James McCann.
So oh, Nito.
Done with catchers.
Nito. No, seriously. Tomas Nito should be starting every single day for the New York Mets.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like that.
He actually made adjustments last year, and he became a little bit. So what he's doing at the plate, which isn't anything crazy. He's got three home runs, batting 260. But I actually think he's underperforming a little bit of what he's capable of, and I think he's fine, which in, you know, two catcher leagues is pretty good.
Yeah.
Moving to first base. We don't have to talk about this guy too much. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's batting 337, 16 home runs, even has a stolen base. Many, you know, the weight has apparently improved his launch angle. That's a joke. I mean, I never thought that was that big of a deal. But if you're redrafting today, if you're going value for value today, who would you rather have going forward? Vladimir Guerrero or Freddie Freeman, who's batting 241? With 12 home runs and a couple of stolen bases, which I don't know why I keep throwing in stolen bases for these two, but it's fascinating.
Whenever there's a difference between zero and five, there's at least something. I think I was pretty anti-Vlad going into the year because I I needed to see this actually happen, because there's other first basemen that realistically could have approximated what he's done prior to this in his career. But I think if you're drafting now, can I say I don't want either of them, because I don't want to pay what I'm going to have to for Vlad, but I would probably take Vlad over Freeman.
Yeah, that, I mean, that is a completely acceptable answer. I mean, Freeman was already going early, and if there was any, if you were drafting early, Vlad's going probably right there next to him. Freeman, I don't know. It depends where Freeman goes. I would assume if you're an entire league, there's going to be someone that still believes him. I mean, he has a 234 BABIP. He still has 12 home runs. He's going to end up being the player everyone expects him to be. He's batting 241 with 362 on base. He's going to be absolutely fine.
I mean, he was terrible to start the year.
Yeah.
It's been, it was really, I mean, the last 30 days, I guess that's half the season. He's hitting 262, seven homers. It's definitely been, it was a really bad start. That's kind of pulling everything down.
Guys, he's last year's NL MVP.
Yeah.
I'll take Freeman.
Yeah. I mean, yes. How about Jared Walsh, who's performed about as well as almost as well as Vlad, you know, like a baby Vlad here. He's batting 321 with a 383 on base percentage, 11 home runs and two stolen bases. I'm going to keep throwing it in there for these guys. For the Angels, Albert Pujols is out of the way. Not that he should have been in the way to begin with. He does have a 382 BABIP. Where would you slide him in there overall with first basemen right now, Carm?
Yeah, I mean, during draft season, he was just outside my top 35, which is crazy to say.
Would you rather have Jared Walsh or Pete Alonso?
How long is Alonso out for? Not long, right?
No, he'll be back probably next week.
I want Alonso. I mean, he's got the full season track record. I know that last year wasn't the greatest year if you talk to some pundits, but he still has all the power you need. I'm kind of a believer in that.
Well, even with his slow season last year, which everyone loves to harp on, he was still on pace for over 40 home runs.
Exactly. Like, it wasn't really that bad of a season. It's kind of like how Chris Bryant gets dinged for all of his bad seasons, but he's only really had one.
Yeah. Paul, what do you think of this real quick? Because the main thing for me is I believe in Walsh. And if he's going to play every day, which was really his big concern preseason, which we weren't sure about the at-bats and we weren't sure about the average. 321, I don't believe in, but I mean, I think he's going to have he showed he had a decent average last year. I think he can be a higher BABIP guy, not 382, but he hits the ball hard enough. Where I think that he's in the conversation where if you're discussing, like, I'd rather have Alonso, but if you're talking about Luke Voit, who has that power potential and a higher average ceiling than Alonso, but he has injury concerns, I think I'd rather have Jared Walsh. Not saying where I would draft them. Because you know, Voit will probably still go ahead of Walsh, but I think I'd rather have Walsh over Voit like rest of the season.
I think one of the big reasons why I liked Pete a lot going into this year is I thought that offense was going to be really good, and there's not really an offense to still be good anymore around him right now. Everybody's hurt. Everybody's gone. Even if he does come back, like
there's 17 people on the injured list.
Yeah. You know, if he comes back, there's still no, it's a struggling Lindor. There's still no McNeil. There's still no
Conforto.
There's still no Davis. There's still no Nimmo. There's still all the guys that were going to be on base in front of him are not there. So even if the power does come back, you're hoping for, you know, somebody to be on base ahead of him. So I think
Thomas Nito will be on base.
Thomas Nito is going to hit after him. Come on. He's going to hit. James McCann's still going to hit three. But, you know, I think that's a big knock for what's been going on with Alonso, is that even if he does come back, the RBI production is not going to be there. Walsh is hitting in a really good Angels lineup. We might not necessarily think about it even without Trout. It's still a good lineup. They still score runs. They don't necessarily, they're terrible because they can't pitch, but they're going to score runs. And I think that there's still value there, but I think I'd rather have Pete, but I think Walsh has firmly put himself in the 8 to 10 range at first base.
I think he fits in pretty neatly right after Alonso, like before the Moustakas, Baum, Hosmer, Dom Smith, Max Muncy category.
Let's talk about someone who I put in front of, way in front of that second group you just said, who I think belongs in this conversation we're having right now. And I think above Walsh for me, for sure, is Trey Mancini. I mean, this is such a cool story to talk about because we didn't know what to expect. His draft price was held down because he had cancer. That is why we didn't know how he would respond to coming back, being strong, going over a full season, which we still don't know that. But I mean, man, he has come back. He's looked as good as ever. He's been 273 with only, you know, with a 301 BABIP down the middle. He's got 10 home runs, 41 RBIs, which I believe leads the majors, if I'm not mistaken. At least he did it recently. So it's right up there. So he's still batting in Camden Yards and decent offense around him. Cedric Mullins has led the league in hits on more than one occasion this season. So yeah, I don't know. I love Trey Mancini. Where would you rank Alonzo, Voit, Walsh, Mancini the rest of the way, Paul?
I mean, I think, man, that's tough. I think that I might rather have Mancini just because he also in most leagues will also have first base or will also have outfield eligibility or does have it in some places. So I think that definitely gives him a bump. But I think that we kind of have undervalued how good Mancini actually was even before he had cancer and things like that. He still tended to go a lot later than he deserved. I mean, he's hit over 290 twice in the three full seasons he's played, and his worst season was 242. That's definitely a big drop, but he's hit 35 home runs, 24 home runs. He definitely has power. And I think it's one of those things where we forget how these guys who are producing in bad lineups are actually still really valuable for fantasy. Like, and I think that he gets hurt because he plays for such a bad team and has played for such a bad team, even before having cancer and being dinged for those kinds of things. So I think that he's definitely a guy who's shown he's healthy right now and he deserves to be pushed back up.
And he keeps getting better as the weather heats up and he gets more loose, because he's batting 273 on the year. Last 30, he's been 315 with 6 home runs. Last 7, he's hitting 370 with 3 home runs. I mean, yeah, he's getting better. Go ahead, Carm.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, during draft prep, I had him plugged in for 550 plate appearances, which seems low now, but you got to really think about over the last year, a lot of stuff has happened to him. Do we think he might get tired in the second half of the season, especially with the Orioles not in contention? Maybe they kind of slow play him a little bit to make sure he's ready to go for 2022. I obviously have no idea, but that is something I think we have to think about at least, right?
Yes. I mean, that was a concern in drafting him. Go ahead.
He might be a trade target for some teams, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, now that with Chris Davis is out for the season for the Orioles, I don't know if they have insurance on his contract. They probably do for how much he makes. And the Orioles are now thinking more towards the future. I don't know what their plans are. They already talked about trading Santander. I thought he was going to be gone preseason. So you never know. He may be traded, like you said. But even if he does get traded, it doesn't maybe take away the possibility of him sitting on occasion. I don't think that would be enough to scare me away.
Yeah.
The concerns aren't there for Walsh. I think he'll play every day like Walsh. I think Alonzo will play. But with Mancini, I think he'll get the occasional day off, except I believe in his ability to do what he's doing now than I do for Walsh. There could be a huge cold streak coming for Walsh, but I don't think there's one coming for Mancini. For that reason alone, I probably take, I don't know. I have no, Voit's firmly fourth of this group for me, because I do believe he'll get injured again, unfortunately.
Agreed on that for sure.
And then I think I take Walsh.
How about third? I take whichever one has the lowest ADP.
Yeah, I still have one or the other. I don't want Voit. Like, I don't want you. We're going to talk about Yuli Gurriel in a second, who I also don't want. He's probably criminally underrated. We'll move on. You know what? I like all those guys. I love Mancini. I would not hesitate to draft Mancini or Walsh or Alonzo. But yeah, it would be a matter of how the draft is going and rest of season. Yuli Gurriel right now is batting 312 with 7 home runs. Last 30, he's batting 293 with 4 home runs. Last 7, he's batting 250 with 0 home runs. He's someone that usually doesn't have this kind of, doesn't have a ton of power, but he's going really well this year. He's doing it in a decent lineup. He's fine. I don't know really what else to say here. Who would you rather have going forward, Carm? Yuli Gurriel or Dominic Smith?
I'd rather take Dominic Smith. I think Dom Smith has the higher upside. I think in terms of the power department, for sure. Kind of like DVR has mentioned on his podcast, I feel like I'm always wrong on Gurriel. Like, the year I think he's going to be great, he's terrible, and vice versa. So I would say whatever, I'm thinking based on that, you should probably take Gurriel because I prefer Smith.
I don't want Dom Smith. I didn't like him much coming into the year. I know you were big and that the changes were real. I think that everything that I thought could have gone wrong, I mean, it's been worse than expected, but it's it's exactly what I expected to have happen, that it wasn't necessarily real huge changes. It was just a great streak, and I'd rather take Gurriel.
Are you talking to who are you referring to?
Well, I know you were big on Smith coming to
me. I was not. I was actually very off.
You were.
No.
Oh.
I was actually very Mets fan? I was very anti-Smith. I think that I like him. I think the batting average was real-ish.
Yeah, the power's
I think
he'll not. Be
a yeah, I think he's a doubles hitter. Which
so
I actually think
so he's Yuri Gurriel. He's Gurriel. Is that exactly what he did?
Yeah, I think that he's Gurriel, but he was gonna be in I don't know. I think that there was more. I think there was more ceiling. I'd rather have Dom than Gurriel, because I think there is a ceiling there that Gurriel doesn't possess, and I think there's a floor with Gurriel that, you know, I don't
you
know.
Mean hitting 300 with 30 home runs is not something that is something Gurriel can't do.
No, he can. I'm just saying for
years ago
for the rest of the year. I think I really think that there is still something there with Dom. So no, I don't disagree with your point on it being much closer. But yeah. Of the two, I would if push came to shove and those are my options, I would take Dom. But I'm not going to argue with the points you're making, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, the Bad X doesn't even have Gurriel hitting 20 homers for the whole year.
Well, that's
even with his 7 baked in already.
I mean, I definitely think that there's, but I also don't think I would bet on Smith to get to 20.
So it was nice playing in Houston too. I believe Alex Bregman hit a home run last night with an expected batting average of 090.
Yep,
that's great.
It's Duval like.
Reese Hoskins. We don't have to spend too much time on him, but he might be just someone that's what he's doing isn't necessarily a surprise. It's just we didn't know how he'd react from coming back from injury, and he's had some struggles. He's been 262 with 10 home runs, and I think that's just basically he's just doing what he should be doing. I expect him to just kind of keep up this pace. He's never hit 40 home runs, but I think this will probably be the first year he does it. I think he'll get there.
Yeah. 30 plus homers and hit about 250, which is probably what you drafted Reese Hoskins for and what he's doing for you.
Yeah. I think I'd still rather have Alonso over Hoskins just because Alonso's upside to get to 50.
Oh, yeah. I didn't mean to throw him. I don't think he belongs anywhere near that tier. Yeah. I mean the next guy I was going to talk about is Jesus Aguilar, and I'm not necessarily sure that Hoskins does any better than Aguilar. I'd obviously rather have Hoskins because of the park he's playing in, but Aguilar batting 255 with 9 home runs, I think they're basically the same guy, except Hoskins is going to get on base more, therefore he's just a better player. So I like him over Aguilar, but I think Hoskins is closer to Aguilar than he is that tier we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Aguilar, Josh Bell, rest of season. I said this so many times during the offseason. Everyone was like, you're crazy. And now look what's happening.
I don't remember you saying that. You're making this up.
Govier knows.
No, I remember. You said this a few times. Josh Bell's been terrible. I would be interested if I was redrafting. I'd be interested in taking Josh Bell and the assumption that he's going – incredibly late, and he would probably be like a bench bat for me. But yeah, if I had to place my money on who has a better second half, you know what? I'd probably still take Josh Bell, but I wouldn't feel confident about it. But yeah, I still think Bell ends up better.
Yeah, the weird thing about Aguilar is, despite his awesome beginning of the season, he still sometimes sits for Garrett Cooper, and Josh Bell isn't sitting for anyone in that Nationals roster. So Bell, I think, has a safer floor at least. And you could make the case he has higher upside too.
I think that Aguilar has these stretches where he hits a ton of home runs and then he like forgets how to hit the ball in the air for a while. And he's done it a few times now where, what was it? The 1 year with Milwaukee, he hit
2018.
Like, yeah. And then he forgot how to hit for power for the next like two seasons.
Yeah.
So like, I think that he has these stretches where we can see this, you know, all the power comes together, and then I wouldn't want to bet on it too much for the rest of the year because he's a guy that as soon as it starts to go cold, I'm kind of okay with replacing him with something else.
How about Ryan Mountcastle, who's someone that everyone was really high on coming into the year? I mean, he outkicked his coverage big time last year. He was an obvious BABIP regression candidate, and now he's kind of struggling this season. What do you guys think of Mountcastle? Is he someone that you think is, you know, just having a big sophomore slump? Do you think adjustments are coming for him?
He swings at literally everything that gets thrown near him. His like chase numbers were ridiculous. Like all the stuff that I do with the Data Monster, he was one of the guys that expanded the zone more often than expected than almost any other hitter. And yeah, you can, he made some great contact on those bad balls, but it's not going to last forever. So I'm not really shocked. So until he really kind of turns that approach around, I don't really know if we're going to see a huge jump. I don't know if he's a good enough, you know, if he's good enough when he makes contact to really be a low walk, swing at literally everything guy.
Anything? Yeah. I mean, I had him top 16, I think, going into the season. That looks like a terrible position for him. I would drop him down probably outside the top 25 based on how some lower first baseman at the time are performing so well right now.
All right. Let's move into second base here. We'll try to go a little faster. We're not going to get all the way through the offense. We may actually save outfield and starting pitching for next time. Second base, Marcus Semien kind of leading the way, second base and shortstop. He's batting 286 with 12 home runs and 8 stolen bases, which is beautiful. I have never been a big Semien fan. I thought that his big breakout was somewhat of a fluke, and he was closer to what he was the previous season. He's doing really well with Toronto. Our, you know, 347 BABIP, there's a few things to suggest, you know, what he's doing isn't necessarily on the level, which, you know, just batting 286 could have bring him down. But again, from a Roto standpoint, he's not killing you in average. And in a year where everyone's batting 230, it's actually, he's doing really well. Power, speed, fantastic lineup. He's the number one overall second baseman so far. Do you, Carm, think that this is something that he can even stay in the top five rest of the season?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at his stats right now, it projects very similarly to his breakout 2019 campaign. Mm-hmm. And second base is such a wasteland where I think that it is pretty feasible that he holds up as top five for sure, if not top three. Like you said, the lineup is awesome. He's hitting near the top of the lineup. Yeah, I see good things still happening for him the rest of the way.
How much of his production's been in Dunedin? I don't have his home road splits in front of me.
I don't have that. I wish I did, because
they're gonna not be there anymore after what, next week or something like that.
Going back to Buffalo, which isn't a terrible place to hit.
It was still a good hitter's park, but I don't think it's as good as Dunedin is. So I definitely think that there's going to be some regression in that sense, but he's definitely probably still earned enough to be a top 10. You know, he's banked enough now, but I think that if he keeps running hits for similar amounts of power, the average will probably drop. He's still going to be probably a top 10 second baseman.
I don't mean he moves up a lot in overall second and shortstop rankings only because there's been so many injuries and there's been, you know, there's just been a couple of people like really struggling, like Labor Torres. Yeah. So, I mean, it's easy. He's easily going to move up. How about Chris Taylor, who is kind of been Marcus Semien light? He's been 285, 6 home runs in 5 stolen bases, but he's doing it in the Dodger lineup. He has 38 runs scored so far. And, you know, we've seen him do this a lot in his career. So you can basically mark him down, except he's on the Dodgers. Once they're all healthy, you never know when he's going to get in the lineup, which is a concern, but they always seem to fit him in there regardless. So I don't know how much of a concern it should necessarily be. So Chris Taylor, is he someone that you would move up? Like if you were looking for a second base shortstop type player, let's just say shortstop, would you rather have him or Gleyber Torres?
Torres easily still for me.
Easily, really?
Easily, yeah. Torres is kind of swinging a hot bat since he returned from COVID. And with Taylor, like you alluded to, with Bellinger's going to come back, Pollock's going to come back, Seager eventually will come back. Lux is actually playing pretty well right now. I still see him playing in the middle infield even when Seager returns. I mean, Taylor, he'll still fit in. You know, he'll get his 5 starts a week probably, but it's probably lower in the order. Torres has higher upside still. And you can get Torres for cheaper than he was in draft day. So I'll still take that for sure.
The Dodgers consistently tell us that they like Chris Taylor more than everybody else does by playing him even when everybody's healthy.
Yeah, they hate Gavin Lux and they love Chris Taylor.
They love Chris Taylor. He still gets his at-bats. It doesn't necessarily matter really who's healthy for them. They find a way to get him his at-bats and he produces when he does for fantasy purposes. I mean, he's definitely not a star, but you'll take what he's done the last few years. You know, eight home runs and 3 steals last year, the year before in 400 at bats, 12 home runs, 8 stolen bases. He's not going to be a guy who's going to, he's probably not a guy who's ever going to put up top 5 middle infield type of season in a normal season, but he's a guy who's going to give you enough where you're fairly confident slotting him in at pretty much anywhere as a as an injury fill-in, or and he'll probably end up around the 10 to 15 range in final rankings pretty consistently.
All right, we'll get back to Glaber in a second. Let's just lump in some middle infield guys together here. We got a little bit of time left. Joey Wendell. Do you think that, I mean, he's always underrated, but as far as a shallow league play, in deep leagues, whatever, you roll with him. In a shallow league play, is he someone that you would hold on? Let's just say there was a big call-up or someone dropped a player that was real big and he was your last guy. Is he a guy that you consider like 12 team, like you must hold on to him? Or is this just a hot bat situation for an underrated player?
If it's weekly, I think you can cut him. If it's daily where you can, you know, slot him in when he's playing, then fine. They do sit him against lefties still. That might change a little bit if Lau keeps hitting as bad as he has and some of the other guys struggle. But I think that Wendell is going to give you solid numbers when he plays. It's just a matter of in weekly leagues, unless it's super deep, you probably can find a guy that's going to get more consistent at bats and play at least similarly.
Wendell kind of reminds me of Semien in 2019, actually, just without, you know, the guaranteed playing time. I feel like in 10 and 12 team leagues that year, Semien was having this remarkable year. No one noticed. He sat on and off waiver wires throughout the whole season. And then when you looked up at the beginning of September, you're like, wow, this guy's like a top five, like overall shortstop. It was pretty crazy. I'm not saying what Wendell's going to do that. And as a result of that, I think that you should just kind of ride the hot hand and drop when necessary.
All right. How about...
And Matt, real quick, Semien has a 139 WRC plus on the road in 2021, 147 in Dunedin.
What's his home run splits though?
One sec, I was looking at the advanced tab.
Yeah, we don't need those nerd numbers.
No nerd numbers. Ooh, split 6-6.
Ah, that's actually better than I expected it to be.
All the guys we've talked about so far, because we're gonna move on. There's two more middle infielders. There's a couple more we're gonna talk about. Jazz Chisholm. He's batting .286 with 5 home runs and 9 stolen bases. He strikes out like a madman. I think there is a cold streak coming. He has an unbelievably fast bat. He's obviously someone who I think that has played up into the majors. Sometimes you just need that extra push and that extra, I don't know what it is, but he looks like he belongs and he's going to be absolutely fine. He looks like a plus version of Javier Baez. But where would you throw him in with those rest of those names we're talking about? Because those are established names that are going to do well. But I don't think anyone can argue that out of Dunedin, taking Semien out of Dunedin, Chris Taylor's possible at bat issues down the road. Jazz won't have those. He just has growth issues, you know. But his ceiling is higher than both. It just is. So what do you guys think of Jazz going forward? Where would you slot him in rest of the season?
I think that he probably goes in the same area as Semien. I think that if you are looking at a stolen base, if you need more stolen bases, I think I'd rather take Jazz than Semien. But if I need maybe power that I can rely on a little bit more, I'll take Semien. I think they're both going to end up right around the same average rest of season, maybe a small bump to Semien. But I think speed is the differentiator. So it's mainly a team fit thing for me, depending on where I'm at.
Arm, who would you rather have, Jazz or Mondesi?
Mondesi. I think Mondesi is going to steal 9 bases in like 10 days.
And no, then he doesn't know what to do anymore.
I'm not talking just stolen bases. I mean,
I know. You didn't let me finish.
Okay.
I mean, Chisholm has a 35% strikeout rate. That's a lot higher than Semien's. I see Semien's batting average being higher. And, you know, Mondesi doesn't hit well either. They probably have a similar average. Mondesi, you probably got to give the slight bump in power. I mean, I feel like at the end of the day, stolen bases is the separator for them. And so, you know, give me Mondesi for sure.
I mean, I'm just setting you guys up. I'm not drafting Jazz. Everyone right now is cursing me. His last 7, I mean, since he's come back from with a hamstring, he hasn't been that good. He's been 22 over his last 7. He's going to struggle mightily as a rookie in the majors who strikes out a lot. It's going to happen. Give me someone that I have a little more certainty of what I'm going to get. He's going to be drafted too high and just rest the season. I think he's a sell high the second he has like a nice game. You know, I think you're better off moving in another direction.
417 Babbitt, folks.
Adam Frazier, I know you wanted to talk about him real quick, Carm. Why don't we talk about Adam Frazier, future Met, Adam Frazier.
Yeah, I think he was drastically overlooked on draft day just because we knew he was going to be hitting leadoff. I don't care what lineup it is, whether it's your local Little League team or the Pittsburgh Pirates or the Yankees. If someone's hitting leadoff, they're guaranteed at bats. He was never going to give up playing time. He's an easy source of runs. He hits for a good batting average. And overall, he's been fantastic given where we drafted him. He's an easy middle infield plug-in right now, if not a starting second baseman. And I expect that to stay that way for the rest of the season just based on his floor.
Would you rather have David Fletcher or Adam Frazier, Paul?
Give me Frazier. I think he's got a little more power than Fletcher does. Fletcher, you draft strictly for batting average, and I don't think he's going to give you much of anything else. But, Carm, do you have any concern with kind of Matt was joking about it, but Frazier being traded and becoming a kind of super utility guy who doesn't – that's the concern, I feel like, rest of season with Frazier.
Yeah, that's certainly the concern, but given where you drafted him, if you're in a league that doesn't trade, you're just riding that until it falls off the wagon. If you are in a trading league, obviously try and sell him high. You could probably get someone like Chris Taylor, for example, and then be better off in the long run with Taylor.
All right, a couple of rapid-fire things real quick. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa last year was a huge steal in drafts and off the waiver wire. This year, he was a steal again somehow. He's batting .288 with 5 home runs and still the 10 stolen bases. I didn't expect that to really happen. They move him from catcher to third to shortstop. He's like such an anomaly. Do you think he just belongs in the conversation at the top we were talking about? Well, along with Semien? Because, I mean, there's kind of no reason not to put him there.
I think Kiner-Falefa has a lot less power output here. I mean, the public projections have him for like a max of 7 home runs the rest of the season. He'll give you that average and speed for sure. And he's going to obviously stay in the lineup, giving you a great floor. But in a world of power, he doesn't provide it.
I should say we're talking about like NFBC and typical leagues on Yahoo, where he's catcher eligible. This is a completely different thing. This is a completely separate thing. Paul, to cap us off, Brandon Crawford, which I get all the credit in the world. I live near Philadelphia, and Gabe Kapler, I thought was a crackpot, but he goes over to San Francisco. Whatever he's doing with all the adjustments with his veterans, it's working. Some of them are having some of their best seasons of their entire careers.
I mean, I'll ride the hot hand. I try to pick Crawford's a guy in leagues where I've needed middle infield help that I've been looking at or trying to pick up, or, you know, he's been a conditional bid and I've just gotten the guy that I had ahead of him pretty much every single time. I mean, the power is something that we haven't really seen this level of from him. I don't think it's going to maintain, but right now that the whole team is kind of playing over their heads and a lot of people are still chasing power. I know I'm chasing RBIs in a lot of leagues currently. I've got a lot of teams that are doing well on the run side and kind of struggling in the RBI side. And I think that he's a guy I'm taking a chance on, but like a lot of the other guys we've talked about, as soon as it starts to go back down, you know, as soon as he starts to cool off, he's an easy cut. You just kind of ride the hot hand and I wouldn't be actively trading for him.
Who would you rather have rest of the season? Carm, Jorge Polanco or Brandon Crawford?
I'll take Crawford. The power output's probably not real. Like Paul said, he's tripled his career barrel rate right now, but we know he's going to play every day. He doesn't really have any injury risk. They're both kind of like oatmeal.
All right. Some struggling hitters in middle infield. We're really running out of time. I'll go really quick. Just give me your quick thoughts on, let's go, Francisco Lindor. He has a career. I mean, he's literally like career best metrics in like contact and chase rate. He's just making poor contact.
I mean, that could be the not swinging thing could also be a little bit of a concern because I tend to see that guys that like that he might just be making too much contact for his own good. And he might not be making, you know, without having the exit velo numbers in front of me, he might not be making as strong of contact as when he was kind of swinging freely and not really thinking about it too much. So he might be a guy where I want to see that kind of change happen, but he's too good to be this bad. So I'll buy him as a, what was he going as like the fifth shortstop, shortstops deep. So he probably goes like he'd be like the eighth now, if I had to take a guess, without really studying it.
How about Carm, Trevor Story, struggling a bit, not delivering nowhere near his draft price. A certain trade candidate for the Colorado Rockies to then leave Coors, which we know that's not a death sentence by any means for certain hitters. Nolan Arenado has actually had one of his better seasons to date so far with the Cardinals. But Trevor Story is not Nolan Arenado. They're different kind of hitters. if you were going from this for the rest of the season, is Trevor Story someone you're really worried about, or do you think he'll just bounce back?
I'm not really worried about him. I think he'll bounce back. I had him as my top one or two shortstop going into 2021, which, I mean, which kind of looks like right now looks like an error, but he still has 5 homers, 7 steals. He's probably going to get to at least 25 steals when all said and done. If he stays in Coors, which we know it might not happen, that BABIP will probably rise even from 311. He's pretty much in the, his career BABIP is between 340 and 350. So we can expect it to rise if he stays. Or do we trust the Rockies to be smart enough to trade him? I'm not sure.
Well, they did. The guy that should have quit like 2 years ago finally
yeah,
did.
Yeah, that's true. Brittich. Yeah, Brittich is gone. I mean, you're not drafting him probably as a top 3 to 5 shortstop right now, but he's probably still a late second, early third rounder.
I think I'd still take him as a top 3 shortstop, 3 to 5 as of right now.
He's another guy he'd be on my do not draft list. Not that I expect him to be bad, but that I will definitely go in another direction. Someone else in a 12 team, 15 team draft will take him early. Therefore, there's no reason for me to even worry about it. It's not like, you know, oh, is there a certain spot where he'd fall? Sure, I'd take him at a certain spot if I notice him, but that ain't going to happen. He's not going to be on my team. I am worried he gets traded. I don't know what that's going to be. So, no, thank you.
I think the shortstop drop off that we saw, you know, it was a clear top two tiers. And then it was like, oh, I don't have one of the top 10 shortstops. Now what do I do? Kind of thing. I'm taking guesses. I think that next 10 has really been a lot better than people think. So I think shortstops might not be pushed up as much as they were early in actual draft season if you were to redraft tomorrow.
Carm, who are you more confident in turning it around to expected value going forward, DJ LeMahieu or Gleyber Torres?
DJ LeMahieu has a profile to the point of where I think that it's easier for him to turn his season completely around as to where we thought he would be as opposed to Gleyber.
How about you, Paul?
Gleyber's been bad for – he wasn't good last year really either, or as good last year either. I think I definitely would rather see DJ, or I think DJ has a better chance of turning it around.
All right. Do you guys have time for third base?
Let's roll.
All right.
I can, yeah.
All right. Real quick. Guys that are doing better than usual. I mean, Rafael Devers was in the top 5, right around there. He was in that mix of Rendon, Arenado and him were kind of, and Bregman, they're all going around the same area. And then you kind of took whoever was the cheapest is what I wanted to do. Devers has been absolutely amazing. They have all that stuff with, you know, him not being in shape and his manager not being around, and JD Martinez didn't have his video. Therefore, that was really holding back the entire team because he helped everybody. All of a sudden, Rafael Devers has been amazing. I think what he's doing is absolutely to be expected. I think that he should have won. I think he could have won MVP the year that that Marcus Semien came in like second. I think Devers should have been in there as well. So, I mean, I love it. He's been 273, 13 home runs, 3 stolen bases. I think he's going to even do better than this going forward. I love Rafael Devers.
He's always been a slow starter, right? And this is the first year where he hasn't done that. And I think that, you know, his end of season numbers always end up this way, but he ends up kind of crushing it from the end of the season on to kind of recoup that. So I think that, you know, starting off, he probably ends up having one of his best seasons of his career, but I think that you're not really shocked when he's, you know, the number one shortstop or the number one third baseman. I don't think this is really a shock to anybody that drafted him.
It's funny. It's actually not been a strong position this year as far as there's not like a ton of, I don't want to say like there's not bad, but there's not really like a ton of elite guys at the top, especially the expected elite guys. There's been a lot of people struggling at this position, I should say, if that makes sense. I mean, even Jose Ramirez batting 261, 12 home runs, 6 stolen bases is good. I mean, you're not complaining, but it's not what you're expecting. How about Chris Bryant? Here's someone that a lot of people, we alluded to him earlier in the episode. He was left for dead. He was one of my favorite buy lows this year. He's batting 308 with 10 home runs, a couple of steals, 368 BABIP. I don't know if he'll get traded. They're in second place. I only think a game or two out of first. Carm, you're a Cubs fan. What do you make a Chris Bryant? I mean, he's sticking around, I'd assume, right?
Yeah, I kind of alluded to this where everyone dings Chris Bryant for all these awful seasons he had, but he only really had one bad one. That was last year. Otherwise, his WRC plus has been above 126 or better since he entered the league. I don't think he'll get traded. I don't think we would get enough to justify trading him when he is one of the best players in the league right now. we did see the Cubs deal Darvish this offseason, so I guess you cannot fully rule it out, but I see him staying in Chicago, and while he won't, you know, be near a 170 WRC plus for the rest of the year, probably, I still see him around 150-ish. That's a great, it's a great bargain you got on draft day.
Paul, Eduardo Escobar, I don't know where he'd be valued going forward because he's been batting 230, and that sticks in people's minds. He's doing it with a 237 BABIP, but he has 12 home runs, 35 RBIs for Arizona team that is kind of been struggling on its own. They're going to start to get healthier. They got Marte back. Walker will be back. Like, they'll get their players back. Is he even a buy high? One, do you believe in him? Do you think that what his the power that we saw that a lot of people didn't believe in coming out of 2019 here is real? I don't know. Where do you slot him? Because I think the power will regress. I think the average will go up. I would like to acquire him right now, but I don't know exactly where I price him.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably going to go. I don't have where he was being drafted up off the top of my head, but you probably bump him to one of the first corner infielders, I'd want to say, being taken. Probably not a starting third baseman in most leagues because the average is as poor as it is. He's not a guy who has a high OBP. He's never going to be a guy who's going to walk a ton. He's always going to kind of be this kind of free swinger that when the power's going well, it's going really well. I think that, like you said, he's hit 35 home runs before. He's had years where he's, you know, been in the 20s. I don't think this power is exactly, you know, abnormal for him, but I think he's definitely a guy that I'm still buying, kind of thing. But I'm just never not really going to actively go out to acquire him. He's just going to kind of be on my team if he's there already. And if I end up getting him in a redraft type of situation, then I'm going to take him there.
Okay. And Carmen's got a run. He's got a meeting. So we're going to finish up third base with Adam. Carm, thanks for joining us. And, you know, we'll obviously have you on in the near future to finish some of these positions up.
Yes. Can't wait. You can follow me on Carm's Clubhouse on Twitter, and I will be seeing you guys soon.
See you, Carm. Paul, let's to stick on Escobar for a second, someone who's also struggling, who's not similar input, because it was almost the player I'm about to bring up is a Superman version of Escobar. And that's Eugenio Suarez.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I wouldn't rather have Escobar going forward. If you made me pick between the two, I'll still take Suarez, and I would feel horrible about it because I don't think there's anything to suggest low BABIP and all that there's much of a turnaround coming. Whereas Escobar, I think that there is a little more in the tank for there to be. I wouldn't be excited about either, but given between the two, maybe this is just about Eugenio Suarez. I do not believe him in at all. And I wouldn't draft him. God, I would have to be so late. It would have to be so late for me to take Suarez.
The benefit to him is, well, I guess you're never even going to use him at shortstop. You might use him in middle infield, but Escobar probably has second base as well. So I guess they're really similar in that sense. But I mean, the power I believe in more with Suarez, we've seen consistency in doing it.
Yep.
The average is the exact same, you know, pretty much bottomed out zero floor. So I think that they're really similar players, but I probably give the slight edge to one, the guy that hits in Cincinnati every day, and two, the guy that hits in that lineup every single day in Suarez. But I don't feel good about it, and I don't feel good about how close it actually is either.
Yeah, I mean, it's a situation you want to be in to have to choose, but God, he looks so bad. How about Justin Turner? He's always underrated. He's batting 271, 8 home runs, nothing too crazy, but who would you rather have going forward, Justin Turner or Yuli Gurriel at corner infielder?
I'll take Turner, just because I think that the Dodgers are a better team. Turner's been Turner's been pretty cold of late, actually, as a guy who has him on a team, and you know he was killing it for the first couple of weeks. The power's kind of gone away.
204 over the last 30.
Yeah, he's definitely kind of cooled off a little bit, and I think some of the power's kind of gone away. But I think part of that, as much as we might not want to, even though he's hit three in that order pretty much ever since he's broken out, I think there's definitely a huge part to guys who are, they might still hit in the middle of the order, but they're not the guy, right? When Cody Bellinger comes back and when some of these other guys, Corey Seager's back, there's definitely got to be some sort of mental thing that's coming in with Turner where he's trying to do maybe too much potentially, even though that is still a good Dodgers lineup. So I think he's a guy that I would want to have rest of season over Gurriel, because I think part of why Turner was so cheap was we weren't sure if he was actually going to return. And now he's returning and playing pretty much every day. So there's no reason not to move him up from where he was being drafted.
All right. And the last player we'll actually talk about is Matt Chapman, who's batting 211, not a big surprise, with only 5 home runs, a little bit of a surprise, with 20 RBIs for the A's. He is someone that I, in the past, as early as even the beginning of last year, as I love Matt Olson, but I thought that these two players were very, very similar in terms of what they could deliver. I thought Chapman could be a 240 hitter with 40 home runs. I mean, the low batting average is fine. You're going to expect a 211 sucks, but it's not a surprise it would ever sit that low this early in the season. But the lack of power is a little bit of a concern. So what are you thinking right now in terms of Matt Chapman going forward?
I think Chapman is one of the only guys I kind of alluded to it earlier where his fantasy value somehow gets pushed up because he's good defensively. In the sense that I think people think he's a much better real life player than he is a fantasy player.
Well, he does hit. I mean, until this year. This year has been bad. Yeah. He hits the ball terms of skill, of batting, like hit tool. He hits the ball just about as hard as anybody in the league, which is intriguing.
I understand why there's people that love him, and I definitely did. But I think that we tended to overvalue how good he actually was as a fantasy player. You know, the 25 to, I guess when he hit 30 home runs in 2019, that wasn't exactly like insane for the rest of the league. That was, you know, well above average, obviously. But I think that one of the things that happens with him is there's other third basemen that kind of that give you a little bit more in the average category, maybe a little bit less in the power side of things. And it's more what you kind of want. But I think he's a guy that we've pushed up higher, I think, than he probably ever deserved to be. And expecting him to keep the 30 home run power and return to that 280 average he had in 2018. I think you're kind of hoping, you got to hope for one or the other. And I think that we don't know necessarily how his injury last year kind of affected him and things like that. And if it's still kind of coming back, but I think the power is not going to be as, the average definitely isn't coming back, and the power might end up being more 25 to 30 instead of 35 to 40.
His barrel percentage last year was 18%, this year down to 10.4, which 10.4 is fine. It's 18.
A good hitter.
His hard hit percentage the last previous 3 years, 47.8, 49, 51.7. It's down to 38.7. He's getting on top of the ball a lot. His top ball percentage was 15%. Now it's up to almost 30%. His weak contact for his career was 0.5%, 1.4, 1.1. Now it's up to almost 5%. It's going very poorly. Which brings me to, who would you rather have for the rest of the season? Matt Chapman, who is someone you expected a low batting average and 30 to 40 home runs, or Austin Riley, a guy who you expected a low batting average and 30 to 40 home runs, but someone who theoretically could have lost his job, whereas Matt Chapman's defense would have kept him in the lineup no matter what. Riley obviously doing phenomenally better. I mean, Matt Chapman's batting 211, his expected batting average is 199. Whereas Austin Riley is hitting the cover off the ball lately, and he's doing it for average, which is a fluke on his end. BABIP is something, I don't know, 360 to 380, something insane. So who do you like there? Assuming even cost, because I would assume they'd be even cost if there was a redraft right now, right?
Yeah, I think they're probably going in the same range. You're going to see Riley move up because he probably has secured his job-related concerns. I think I would rather have Chapman because I think that there's still, with Riley, there's always still the chance that he just starts swinging and missing at absolutely everything, where Chapman might do that anyway. But, you know, he still is a, like you kind of alluded to, he's going to play because of how good he is defensively, where I know I kind of knocked him for that beforehand. But in the same sense, I think that their end of season numbers look the same. I just have Riley probably has a wider range of outcomes. Riley could keep this up all year and he could vastly outperform him. Or at the same time, I think the bottom can drop out of Riley. So I think if I'm looking at it, you know, Chapman's going to be within his 40 to 60th percentile finishing outcome. And I think Riley could be anything really. So I think I'd rather take Chapman in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, Riley's batting 312. His expected batting average is around 50 points lower. He does have 9 home runs. I alluded to Chapman dropping from 18% barrels to 10. Riley sitting at 13. And that weak percentage, which I was trying to make a big deal on how it increased from almost 0% for Chapman to around 4 to 5. Yeah. Chapman, I mean, Riley's sitting at 7.5 right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of variance to Riley. I was a Riley believer, but my enthusiasm was tied to his draft price.
Yeah.
So right now, yeah, if it's even, it would be hard for me to pass on Chapman, who I would think something will turn around, because you don't just, the batting average will be low, but you just don't go from hitting the ball as hard as anyone in baseball for 3 straight years to all of a sudden forgetting how to do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Chapman's a guy that I wonder if you look at his, you know, stretches just anecdotally as a guy who's had him on a dynasty team for a few years.
Yeah.
He's definitely a guy who goes through some serious ebbs and flows. And I wonder if, you know, looking at, again, anecdotally, I wonder if actually looking at the numbers, if that kind of holds true. Yeah. And this isn't like abnormal for a poor stretch for him.
All right. So that's where we're going to stop it, everybody. We went through the infield. We were originally going to do everything, but like, you know, as it goes on the show, we love talking about baseball. So we'll save the outfield and starting pitching for a future show. So Paul, thanks for finishing this up with me. Tell everyone about the work you're doing at RotoFanatic, anything that you're doing, some of the great posts you're making on Twitter using the Data Monster, where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at PMAMinoFantasy. I've been doing this thing for the past couple of weeks, kind of taking the Data Monster numbers, turning them at a team level, and kind of putting out graphics that show how a pitcher's matchup kind of looks for him in the sense of how the Data Monster views it. Coming up, we just updated all of the, we put the first run of the 2021 prospect stuff in there. Hopefully Tuesday, I will have an article up with that, kind of explaining it. I don't think I've done that yet for the site, but kind of explaining exactly what goes into the prospect model, how it works, and how you can kind of better understand it. Tomorrow, I already forgot the guy that I'm supposed to write up, but I'm going to have a GPS location report article once again kind of going. Last week, I had Eduardo Rodriguez and talking about how stuff ERA is a lot lower on him than a lot of other FIP and some of the other pitching metrics are, and he kind of went out and got lit up again. So I forget who I'm writing up tomorrow, but you'll be able to find it on the site tomorrow.
It must be a good one. All right, everybody, you can follow me on Twitter, Matt Williams, MATTWI77IMS. Definitely follow RotoFanatic at Roto_Fanatic. Check out all the Data Monster on the navigation bar, and follow the Turn 2 Podcast at Turn 2 Podcast on Twitter. We'll be back next week. We'll talk all about outfielders. Maybe we'll do pitching as well, but it'll probably just be all about outfielders, because we know we should know ourselves by now and know that we're going to go long. So
an hour and a half on Adolis Garcia.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening to Turn 2 Podcast, everybody. We'll be back next week. See you.
My oh my, put me in, coach. I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turned 2 in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn 2 in every way, so I turn to you 2 today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it in the points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn 2, turn 2, what it do? Win leagues, catch out.